I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of six darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. Do you understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Welcome to Feel Good Friday, our weekly segment where we dive into the weird and wild news in the world of health. This week, rage, East versus West, teeny tiny heartbreaks, Deputy Jeff to the rescue, and double D's, please.
Oh, God.
Oh, you guys didn't like that?
That made me uncomfortable.
Made my butthole pucker.
What? Why? You didn't like that?
I don't know.
It made me just like, I don't know.
Double D's, please.
It just reminded me of like a porn video that you just like immediately regret.
I think I kind of like it though. I don't know. Like there's something I like about it.
You like a little too much there, Brian.
Yeah. Sorry.
All right. Well, this is a serious CBC show, so let's get serious.
It's not helpful for me that this is on YouTube because everybody can see what just happened to me.
Right.
If they go and
it
watch.
It is embarrassing.
Guys, first of all, I just want to say, shout out to the fucking comment section on YouTube.
Dude, shout out.
Popping off.
Shout out.
Last week, it was popping off. We had 3 comments last week.
Whoa.
Someone even said, really? Comment section's popping off.
And I think it was, I think there was 2 at that point, and then I think you added a 3rd.
And and that's what I said. Somebody else also said, look at the comment section go, and I was like,
it was one person before that.
So yeah, so really, I mean, but hey, whatever.
Right, right. Yeah, it's still good.
But on top of that, I want to say these Feel Good Friday episodes for the last couple of weeks, they've been very fun. I've been really enjoying the prep. I don't know, like, mm-hmm. You know, I've always enjoyed the prep for Feel Good Friday. I love bringing stuff to like, you know, to sprinkle over you guys, interesting facts and weird, wild stuff. But I've been really like, I don't know, the last couple of weeks, I've just been feeling really stoked about the stuff that's coming up on the show. I got another one today that I really fucking love. And it's, we're going to go a little bit research heavy for a couple of segments today. But this first one, I think is very, very cool. So we're going to be talking about the implications of rage on our health, but we're going to be talking about it.
It's got to be bad.
We're going to be talking about it from a cultural perspective. So
of the uprising new rage room facilities in cities.
No, actually, you know what? I feel like that's a healthy rage. We're going to be talking about unhealthy rage.
Oh, okay.
That's like a safe outlet.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about like.
Yeah,
some more Nick Cage there. Love some Nick Cage.
Okay, oh,
I didn't even clock that. Yeah. That's wonderful. Of course it is.
So, like, not to get ahead of ourselves, but I think that we should approach this through the eyes of the question of whether or not rage rooms are a net positive to cities a net negative.
Okay, that's great. Put a pin in that, and let's bring it up at the end after we go through this.
Okay, perfect.
I'm actually curious about what your thoughts will be.
Great.
So this is from a study published in Psychological Science. The title of the article is Anger Expression and Ill Health in 2 Cultures, an Examination of Inflammation and Cardiovascular Risk.
Mm.
Now, I was going to start this by asking you guys, do you guys think that anger can have a negative effect on our health?
Yes.
I feel like 100%. I sort of spoiled it there, but what would you say outside of the what I just read there? Like what do you think you would have sort of guessed?
If I was to say like from my own personal experience, I know that if I end up in a situation where, and this is very anecdotal, but like if I get very angry, I feel, you know, my heart rate increases, my sort of I have like an inability to like articulate or communicate my thoughts in that situation. So I'm feeling a very physical reaction to it, and in a way that sort of like inhibits my ability to like function as like a rational, thoughtful adult. And so when I feel that, I assume that, you know, extended over a duration of time then results in more negative health outcomes.
And the reason that is, I'm assuming that this is probably going to be part of what Jer's what Jer's going to bring up in this article is when you, you know, not that there's not a time like an appropriate time to be angry, because there definitely is. It's an emotion that you have, and
sure,
you know,
yeah,
you
yeah.
express it
yeah.
in certain moments, and there's times where that's appropriate and necessary and helpful. But a lot of the time, I would say most of the time that most people are angry is at an unnecessary time. And what that emotion will do to your nervous system is it will trigger a nervous system that's not appropriate for the current actual physical setting that you're in, meaning that your sympathetic nervous system, your fight or flight response, is triggered in an environment where your fight or flight response is not necessary. It's not helpful to you. And your fight or flight response is inducing stress. And when you induce stress in an environment that doesn't require stress to solve the situation or circumstance that you're in, that has negative health outcomes. And over prolonged periods of time, stress is, I think, the number one killer of people everywhere.
Do you think, just a quick thought, and I don't want to go too far down this road, but it makes me wonder, is anger a beneficial emotion to have in the situation, or is it more beneficial to sort of like look at that experience of anger that you feel and then try to understand it and learn from that, rather than, you know, like looking at like anger itself being beneficial?
This coming Monday, we are releasing an episode from our live recording with Dr. Gabor Mate from Vancouver. We're very excited for people to see it. It's going to be on YouTube. The video looks amazing. Brian's working on it now. And we talked about some of the stuff that's in his latest book, The Myth of Normal. And in The Myth of Normal, there's actually a whole chapter about anger and the ways of introducing healthy anger into your day to day. So I think that there is an argument for anger being a very valid and healthy emotion. But I think, again, it kind of stems based on what you were saying there, Tay, of like the context that where that anger arises, how you relate to that anger, how you control that anger, yada, yada. Now, also to what you were saying there, Taylor, when people get angry, adrenaline rises, cortisol levels rise. I just quickly Googled what are the symptoms of high cortisol levels. Didn't know this. Interesting. Weight gain, especially in your face and abdomen. Fatty deposits between your shoulder blades. These are very specific.
It's because you just like tighten your body.
Yeah,
like,
maybe.
Oh.
Wide purple stretch marks on your abdomen. Muscle weakness in your upper arms and thighs. High blood sugar, which often turns into type 2 diabetes. So, I mean, there's a bunch of like...
And that's all like... Those are all... It says anger. It doesn't necessarily need to be anger. Those are all stress. Those are all like...
That's specific cortisol, right?
Which is a symptom of of stress, which it sometimes is like it's like you need to be stressed. You need to you need to fight or fly.
Right. Yes, that's right.
But in a moment when you are in that state over like, you know, sometimes you just some people live in that state all the time, like perpetually. And then that like, in those experiences is where you're gonna get those things showing up
totally
physically.
Yeah. I run like I for a long time I ran on my fuel was anger. I ran on anger. And I'm just starting to like realize that now as a 36-year-old and like work through that now. But let's get to this study.
Because well, good thing that it happened, you know, that you started
God to damn it, can
you
I talk?
You started to recognize that soon after you stopped being malnourished. Because if you had been like running all like this high cortisol level before, like, and you weren't malnourished your whole life, then your face would be seven times its size.
Oh, dude, if I didn't have CF, I would look very different. Smoking 10 packs a day, fucking fat as a fat, just like
live
just,
hard, die, live hard, die.
Oh,
up,
yeah,
you know
dude.
What I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, the study that we were going to look at, anger expression and ill health in two cultures, cast a spotlight on how the expression of anger impacts our health, but with a little bit of a twist. It differs very starkly between Western and Eastern cultures, specifically between, in this study, they looked at Americans and Japanese. The research hinges on the idea that cultural context in which anger is expressed profoundly influences its health implications. Okay? So in Western cultures, and, you know, particularly we're talking about the U.S., but we can talk about Canada, too, because we're basically
like more or less the you know, the liberal cuck version of the US. Trudeau. wait, are CBC pro Trudeau? I feel like
Yeah, we are. You can't say that.
I feel like CBC is pro whoever's in office because they pay.
Actually, CBC is pro whoever's given us fucking funding. And right now, CBC took some cuts. I don't think it's fucking a big surprise. And who's sitting on the throne? Who's sitting on the throne?
Trudeau.
Yeah. So we should bring Trump up to Canada. I feel like
think what you will.
I think we should avoid talking.
You know what? Do your own research. Draw your own conclusions.
By the way, I don't lean anyway. Okay. So anyway,
I don't even pay attention.
I'm sure
there's
people that listen. Like, I've been joking about this Trudeau stuff for a little while, and I'm sure people are like, he's right. He's alt right.
It's making me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I know you.
So in Western cultures, particularly in the United States, expressing anger is often linked with a range of biological health risks, also known as BHRs. These risks include elevated levels of pro-inflammatory markers like interleukin 6 and C reactive protein, and indicators of cardiovascular malfunction such as high systolic blood pressure and unfavorable total HDL cholesterol ratios. The study suggests that in these contexts, anger often rises from personal frustrations and unmet goals, leading to stress, a stress response that negatively impacts physical health. Okay, so that's the US. In contrast, the study found that in Japan, a culture that highly values social harmony and where anger expression is generally discouraged, the health implications of expressing anger are strikingly different. For Japanese individuals, especially those with higher social status, expressing anger can be an assertion of power and dominance. Intriguingly, for these individuals, anger expression is associated with reduced biological health risks. This could be because in this cultural setting, displaying anger might reflect a sense of empowerment and control, which are actually beneficial for health.
So it's kind of like those,
those fucking fascinating.
And might also come out at more appropriate times as a result.
Sure.
Right. Like, so, the rams
or inappropriate.
That,
I will say that I'll kind of.
Never mind.
But hold on. I will push back on that in the sense that, you know, if you're thinking about someone who's a higher social status and they're using anger to like assert power and dominance, that also seems a bit unnecessary, right? Maybe not the correct way of going about anger. Anyway, sorry, Brad.
I had a better analogy of a proper time, which is when two rams are about to butt heads, mm-hmm. and like, you know, one is like, I mean, they're probably like experiencing some form of anger.
Dude, I love watching rams
criticizing them.
Ram.
And
pretty interesting.
And they clash into each other.
My favorite is the moment where they both at the same time are floating.
Right.
They come up and they both float and then they fucking go.
Right.
And God, I wish I had a clip.
When they stop and like one sort of like concedes to the other and sort of whimpers off.
Do they get CTE?
I think they're biologically designed to like handle that pretty well, but yeah. I don't know anything.
I would also make that assumption, but I have no idea. I mean, they're doing it all the time, so I mean, you got to think they're built for it, but who knows?
So I want to.
That's good anger, right?
I want to before.
That's like I'm fighting to pass on my genes.
Yeah, and they're asserting their power in a productive way.
Yeah. I would imagine. Yeah.
I would like to, before we get into like the significant findings of the study, I would like to just take a moment to just kind of, to help the listener and to help us put all this into context. Let's take a look at two examples of anger being expressed in the US and anger being expressed in Japan. Okay.
I'm sure it looks very
here,
fun in the US.
Well, actually, you know, before we do that, let's do this. Before I show you US anger and Japanese anger, I will show everybody Snack Lab/Sick Boy anger. Okay, so here is Brian when Brian is feeling very angry.
that is me feeling very angry. You can see the way that the expression on my face looks.
The way that your shirt is shaped there, it looks like you just got your paddling lats back.
I still have them. That's not a trickery of the camera.
You are just V shaped like that.
That is right. Yes.
So here is Taylor when Taylor is angry. Now, Taylor doesn't look as angry as much as he looks like someone took a one of those things where you fill the tire pressure up of your car and they rammed it up his butt and then they pumped him up to mm-hmm. to 600 psi.
Mm-hmm. Kind of looks like he's doing like the people's eyebrow. Right?
Oh, that's yeah, dude. Yeah, yeah.
It's
totally.
It's a heavy people's eyebrow.
Yeah. And I can see how you would get fat deposits between your shoulders doing that.
Yeah,
totally.
Now, again, so we have Brian and Taylor, right? We've got these two angry. To be honest with you, both of these expressions of anger are kind of endearing.
I'm
kind of
like disappointed, I think. Yeah. Like, I'm not angry. Yeah. I'm just disappointed.
Well, when you're angry, Brian, you do that. You pout like that.
You look very pouty.
It's fucking, it's weird. Yeah. You pout.
Yeah, I am.
I remember when I told you guys just a moment ago that I run on anger. So I'm very familiar with anger.
Yeah.
I feel like this is a pretty accurate representation of anger right here. And there we go.
Oh my God, dude. I just got PTSD from all of the times you've been sitting at your computer and either smash your keyboard or like hit your dog and stuff like that.
Yeah. Our coffee table is pretty
well,
banged up.
I did kick a hole through our coffee table in anger.
That
once,
was pre-therapy,
that was,
Jeremy.
Yeah, pre-therapy. Yeah. That was actually height of Jeremy's mental health crisis.
Yeah.
And we keep the table as a reminder.
Fuck. So that's us in anger. Now let's take a look at like just mwah, the fucking chef's kiss of American anger. Here we go.
10, 5, 4, 3. That's tomorrow, and that is a again.
Everyone knows that feeling, right?
I love this clip.
That's
so
tomorrow,
much.
And that is it for us today. And we will leave you with a. Oh, I can't do it. Okay. We'll do it live.
Uh-oh. Okay.
We'll do it live.
Uh-oh.
Fuck it.
Oh.
Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. Right. Fucking thing sucks.
Now I will say this. I feel like this. He was able to channel his anger because watch the result here.
That's tomorrow and that is it for us today. I'm Bill O'Reilly. Thanks again for watching. We'll leave you with Sting and a cut off his new album. Take it away.
Fucking nailed it. Right? Now watch. Now watch. He is pissed. Fuck.
I don't know if I've ever watched the. Angry. I don't think I've ever watched the end of that clip where he gets up,
fucking throws his mic across the set. Okay, so that's that is American anger. Okay, now let's take a look at that at unadulterated Japanese anger.
Right. I'm familiar.
This guy's about to blow. Right.
He seems composed though. Never mind.
Very rude. And this is how the anger is dealt with. Okay. And that gentleman's head was just sliced off with a samurai sword. And
I don't think he effectively asserted his dominance there.
Yeah. So here's what I'll say. After I watched this clip, I thought this was very interesting.
Man, I haven't seen Kill Bill in a while.
This is what I think is interesting about that. And this is my big takeaway. So the American anger, Bill O'Reilly, his cortisol levels were up. They probably stayed up, and he's probably not doing too good. He's probably a bit unhealthy.
Bill O'Reilly certainly has big cardiovascular issues.
I would
in his
say
future.
So, yeah. Now, this gentleman here, I would say that he didn't even have a chance to have his cortisol levels rise because somebody sliced his fucking head off. So, and I don't think in this study they took that into account.
Like how many Japanese people get their heads cut off shortly after becoming angry?
Right. So exactly, which I think would skew the results of this test.
Right.
Because
there's nobody.
Of course,
there's nobody
be
alive. There's nobody left alive to study.
I mean, based on the evidence that we just saw, I feel like that would be an appropriate conclusion to come to.
Like a broad population representation.
So the study's findings are significant for several reasons.
So you mean significantly flawed for several reasons.
So let's go into cultural moderation of anger's health impact. It challenges the previously held assumption that expressing anger is universally detrimental to health. Instead, it posits that cultural context plays a critical role in determining whether anger expression is harmful or beneficial. We also have differing social interpretations of anger. So in the U.S., anger expression is seen as a reflection of negative experiences and personal frustrations, potentially leading to chronic stress and its obvious associated health risks. In Japan, anger can be a symbol of social status and power, which might confer a sense of control
and reduce stress.
Imagine going to a rage room in Japan and it's just themed like a boardroom of an office. And they're just like, you know, like when you go to a shooting range and there's targets.
Yeah.
Instead, it's just targets on the backs of chairs and you just yell at them.
Yeah.
It's really interesting because I think at the outset, after just hearing sort of like the cultural differences with expressing anger and not knowing that there is a skew in the positive or negative direction for either, I would have guessed that the negative impacts were actually higher in Japan with the lower expressions, with the less frequent expressions of anger because of like the impact of not expressing an emotion when it arises. But I suppose even deeper than that, there are cultural factors at play that make it so that anger actually tends to arise far less frequently.
Do you think
in people? That's what it sounds like to me.
Do you think there's statistics of which country is on average the most angry country?
Ooh.
I bet there is.
I bet you there
is. What would you guess?
America.
America sounds like it would be the one, but I feel like...
We got it. Chart the most angriest countries.
Hold on.
Now I don't... look.
What would you guess after America?
I think everybody else is pretty chill relatively.
Really?
Hmm. I don't think it's what you guys think.
Angry.
The United Kingdom.
Let me read this just to make sure that we're not putting like misinformation out there in the world. But Statista.com.
Statista's good. They're reputable.
Nearly everybody experiences anger in everyday life, whether it's frustrations about meeting, blah, blah, blah. Gallup.
Germany, guys, by the way that they speak.
They sound angry,
but I think they're kind of chill.
Okay, so Gallup's 2021 Global Emotions Report set out to gauge emotions, including anger levels, in more than 100 countries around the globe. Anger tends to manifest itself more often in certain parts of the world, particularly in the Middle East and Near East. So, according to Gallup, on Statista.com, the world's angriest countries where the highest share of respondents experienced anger on the day previous to the survey. This is from 2021 to 2022. Lebanon, number one.
Interesting.
Followed by Turkey, followed by Armenia, followed by Iraq, Afghanistan, Jordan, Mali, and Sierra Leone.
Mali?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, M-A-L-I.
M-A-L-I.
I was thinking M-O-L-L-Y. I was like, what?
That would not be angry.
That sounds like a real happy
place. That sounds
a
real happy place.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I wonder if it has to do with how...
Also, a lot of like, you know, Lebanon,
Lebanon,
a lot of
Turkey,
war, a lot of like
economic turmoil.
Yeah, turmoil.
I wonder though too
if I was in Iraq or Afghanistan, I would be fucking pissed.
But considering
especially for the last fucking 30 years,
considering the cultural relationship to however the question was asked, if they're asking and they're saying in that region that's where the results tend to be higher, and they're asking the question of, did you experience anger yesterday, and that's the gauge. I wonder if it depends on how they interpret anger. Like, is anger kind of similar to the whole point of this study?
Yeah,
is like culturally, you know,
what culture?
Because
what
we
does anger
sort of
mean
perceive,
to you?
And like you've made this point in this research, anger in the Western world is perceived to be a negative thing.
I feel like Italians are always fucking angry. I've never met a not angry Italian.
I would say I hear what you're saying, but I would go with passionate. I would say passionate instead of angry.
It seems
to be a skew towards something else that's not quite just fully angry.
Well, when I was in Italy last, I just happened to be in a grocery store, and I took a thing of spaghetti noodles that were dry, like dry spaghetti noodles, and I just snapped them in half. As you do, as everyone does, because it makes it easier to eat. I got kicked out of the fucking grocery store. I got yelled at. No idea what they were yelling. They were very fucking angry that I snapped the spaghetti noodles. And then I put ketchup on my pizza, and one guy tried to drop kick me.
I don't even understand why they would do that, because ketchup is basically tomato sauce.
It's a sweet tomato sauce.
That's what I said.
And like, that's what we do here.
Anyway.
Happiest, happiest, nicest countries, personal experience, Morocco, Indonesia, Bali specifically, and Thailand.
Mm. Costa Rica, pretty happy folks down in Costa Rica. Brazil too. I mean, we're like the places where I was in Brazil and Costa Rica.
Yeah.
Anyway, the study opens up an intriguing question about the role of cultural norms and practices in shaping not just our emotional expressions, but also our physical health. It suggests that our emotional experiences and expressions, such as anger, cannot be universally understood or managed without considering the cultural context in which they occur. I thought that was really interesting. Now,
totally.
Let's come back to your question.
Are rage rooms effective? Are they a net positive to cities, or are they a net negative?
I went to a rage room recently, and just so happened right prior to go, like just before going, was brought into a very heightened state of anger. And when I came out of the rage room, I felt fucking great. It was a very cathartic experience.
So it was a good outlet for your anger.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. See,
it's like screaming into a pillow.
That was my initial thought. Yeah. Like when I was talking about the idea of like, is anger itself good, or is understanding anger and why you feel that way the actual benefit of it? Yeah. And I think to the point of like taking the time to decompress and understand it, I feel like a tool like a rage room generally could be a benefit. However, if it sort of conditions you to think that like smashing things is a good outlet and you don't have this facility that's specifically designed to that, and the next time you get angry, you decide to smash a vase in your apartment or like, you know, punch a hole through the wall, then that's probably not an effective outlet.
Yeah.
Inconclusive, I guess.
Sure. Yeah. Well, since it's Feel Good Friday, I feel like let's move away from anger and move into some good news. Good news of the week. This made me very, very happy to see. This news is coming out of Kentucky. Probably a pretty fucking angry state, if you were to ask me.
I feel like...
What's the angriest state?
Ooh, angriest state?
Probably fucking Kentucky, dude.
Wow, good question.
Somewhere
man.
In the Midwest.
I don't know. Yeah, I'd say somewhere
probably
in the Midwest.
Kentucky, because
sure.
Like you, like if I was from Kentucky, I'd be like, that dude ruined our state.
Man, Massachusetts, man, Boston, name? Man, Boston is Boston
Kentucky
people are
guy.
Angry.
Oh, Colonel Sanders, yeah,
motherfucker.
Boston's
yeah,
angry.
Right.
So maybe not Massachusetts
Boston,
as a whole, but Boston's on edge.
That's an they angry city yeah. for sure.
Boston's on edge. I lived in Boston, and when I went to sports games, I very clearly thought to myself, I would not be caught dead in the opposing team's jersey in this city.
I don't really know. I'm not 100% sure, but like I just have a gut instinct that it's Idaho. But I'm like I don't have any like.
Oh no,
I
man!
Any...
I think Idaho's be like Idaho be. They're just chilling. They're just flatlining.
You think so?
Yeah, they're just along for the ride.
They're like just kind of. Melancholy just existing.
Yeah.
This I mean
this'll get you
this
sound, get you,
I mean,
get
if you
jacked
wanna,
up.
If you wanna fucking
yeah, dude, drop
fuck up your computer keyboard
yeah,
and
dude.
Smash a fucking
Dropkick Murphys, man. This is the source of a lot of my teenage rage. I you know, and Texas nicest, I think.
Yeah. It's because if you're angry in Texas, you're gonna get shot.
Dude, Texans
They
and
are. They
Texans
are.
Texans
I mean,
and like like North and South Carolinians.
Yeah.
It's like the most hospitable, nicest people.
You, like as long as you're not.
And then we got
their,
fucking Trudeau over here taking away our guns.
As long no, as you're think, not on you know, their like, bad side.
On their bad like side. Yeah,
if you,
sure.
If you cross them, then.
Then be prepared to stand your ground.
Right.
Porn, Satan, drugs, therapy. It's not just the list of what I'm up to this weekend. I'm comedian Kiki Anderson, and those are just a handful of the taboo topics I've poked and prodded at so far on my podcast, Indecent, the show where we peel at the wallpaper of polite society. Each episode digs into the dark underbelly of our culture to dissect the things we aren't allowed to talk about around the dinner table, featuring conversations with comedians, activists, journalists, academics. They all help me figure out the who, what, and why behind what is and isn't acceptable behavior. Indecent with Kiki Anderson, where NSFW meets LMAO. Mwah.
So let's get into the good news of the week.
Sounds fair to me.
A Kentucky court swears in the first paid deputy with Down syndrome. A 45-year-old man with Down syndrome has seen his dreams come true when he was recently sworn in as a paid deputy for the sheriff's office in Kentucky. Jeff Reinerson will join the security team at the Daviess County Sheriff's Office, where he will be responsible for upholding security and integrity at the Judicial Center, along with his colleagues. Here's a news clip from the lovely gentleman, Mr. Jeff, being sworn in.
This is my favorite thing ever.
The newest member of the Daviess County Sheriff's Office.
Are you a 10 on the excitement scale?
20.
20. Fuck yeah, dude, 20.
Dude, double.
That's Jeff Reinerson, or excuse
so
me,
excited.
Officer Jeff Reinerson.
For people just listening, we are watching Jeff actually being sworn in.
Paid deputy in a Kentucky Sheriff's Department.
It's a paid integrated position. It's a position that honors and supports his strengths.
This is his friend Amanda.
Amanda Owen here was the one who pitched the position to the sheriff's office. She runs a nonprofit called Puzzle Pieces that supports folks with intellectual disabilities.
She is the first lady.
He called her the first lady.
They've been friends for years, and Jeff even requested that Amanda be the one to hold the Bible when he swore in.
That's amazing.
Isn't that awesome?
Swear, or you can affirm.
Meanwhile, Jeff's boss is going to be Sheriff Bradley Youngman, who received this pitch a few weeks ago and thought it was a no-brainer.
You've seen the expression on his face as he was taking the oath. And I can tell you, you know, it gave me chills to see the seriousness, the determination, because I know Jeff and I know how much he cares about other people. Oh.
So there you go. Jeff, Sheriff Brad Youngman, who was just there, spoke with the Owensboro Times and shares excitement for the new recruit. Quote, I'm very happy to have Jeff join our court's security team. Jeff has a passion for helping people and has always been interested in law enforcement. This is a great opportunity for both of us. The sheriff also explained a little more about the new deputy's role that had been carefully considered to take into account Officer Reinerson's strengths and interests. Due to the fact that Officer Reinerson is very much a people person, he will primarily be involved in customer services, directing visitors to the correct location, and passing on information about the court system.
That's really sweet.
The position will put the law enforcer right in the public eye, where he can offer advice in situations where people can be but can often be a little stressed.
It just goes to show what can happen to when like organizations like Puzzle Pieces and people like Amanda step up and advocate for people like that. To
yeah, totally. Yeah,
those jobs.
Yeah, yeah,
it's really sweet.
It is,
he is
very
lowering
sweet.
American anger in Kentucky.
That's yeah. And
stress levels and improving thus cardiovascular health.
It definitely puts like a much more sort of wholesome. Kind of wholesome meaning behind the term
Officer Down. Repeat, Officer Down.
I thought really hardly about putting that in there because I was like, is that insensitive? Is that mean? But
no, that's
I think it's he has Down syndrome. He's now an officer, and so usually when you hear Officer Down, that's like a horrifying thing. But now when I think of Officer Down, I'm going to think of Jeff. What?
That is really funny.
Is that going to get me in trouble? I thought it was cute.
I think that's a good play on words. That's a good joke.
Taylor?
Yeah.
Are we going to have a talk after this?
We'll talk about having a talk.
Well, I thought it was cute. I thought it was a sweet Office Down. That was from that great movie with Denzel Washington, where he was a bad cop.
Training Day.
Training Day.
That's it. All right, let's move on.
Never seen it.
Brian.
Yeah, obviously.
By the way, also Brian,
I was actually shocked that you didn't see that.
Also, dude, Brian, the clip with the Japanese man who got his head cut off, that Kill was from a movie called Kill Bill. Quentin Tarantino. He's a famous director.
I thought Uma Thurman looked different in that clip, but yeah. I couldn't remember.
Let's get into some more research. So this one, man, it's so funny to me looking at research papers and just thinking, holy fuck, there's someone who just, you know, someone out there is going to a fucking like dinner party and someone's going to go, so what do you do for a living? And they tell them that this is what they do. And I think that's hilarious. So this is from a paper published in PLOS Genetics. The title is Failure to mate enhances investment in behaviors that may promote mating reward and impairs the ability to cope with stressors via subpopulation of neuropeptide F receptor neurons. Okay.
Dude, I don't even know. I usually digest that stuff pretty well. I don't know what you said.
First of all, shorten the title.
I think I got it.
Doesn't even mention what the fuck this is about.
So basically what it's saying is that if you are unsuccessful at getting a sexual partner, you will overcompensate in other areas of your life and develop characteristics that will actually then potentially lead to you getting a partner.
No.
Okay.
But good try. I mean, you were kind of like a 50% on, 50% off.
And it's all because of neuropeptide F. That was it.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you guys this question. Do you think that insects get stressed over dating?
Yes.
I would say yes.
Okay. So scientists in this study have played Cupid, or rather anti-Cupid. By the way, I got ChatGPT to write this whole section, okay? And I thought it was pretty cute.
Okay.
So scientists played Cupid, or rather anti-Cupid, pairing male Drosophila melanogaster. Let's just get the correct pronunciation there.
Drosophila melanogaster.
All right. Let's say it one more time slower.
Drosophila melanogaster.
Drosophila melanogaster. And that's just fancy speak for fruit flies.
Okay. God, I hate fruit flies.
So scientists played anti-Cupid pairing male fruit flies with females who just weren't that into them.
Saw something recently, side note. Not sure if it's true. It was on Instagram. That when you get your shit from the grocery store, that fruits in particular, like bananas carry a lot of fruit flies, they're on the bananas when you get them. You wash the banana peel, you wash the bananas, and you'll get far less fruit flies coming from your bananas.
Ooh, nice. Great.
You can also put them in the oven at 400 for 25 minutes and then...
That'll fucking fry those fuckers right off.
That'll probably do the two. Yeah, I mean, so either way, so
you can also drop
six to one, half dozen to the other, you know? Yeah. Wash them or cook them.
You can also dip your bananas in bleach right before you eat them.
Yeah.
That's right.
You can also, if you just buy bagged frozen fruit, then no fruit flies.
Dude, that's the ultimate hack right there.
It is.
So scientists took male fruit flies and they were trying to pair them with female fruit flies, and the female fruit flies were like, not this scrub. I feel like this whole study was basically like they created this like this really mean prank dating show on for fruit flies. So here's the key findings from romance to stress. Frustrative like states. The rejected male flies entered this state where they're super motivated to mate, but they keep failing. Mm-hmm. It's like continuously swiping right and never getting a match.
So then they go to the gym.
This leads to less social interaction. No wingman for these guys. That's a good one, right? Wingman?
That is a good one.
Fly. More aggression. What is this? A bar fight for ants? You know what I mean? And a sort of depression. So cue the tiny violins.
Right. And then ultimately...
expected to teach children to learn how to read.
And then ultimately they can't even fit inside going to the fruit fly school and...
getting a business degree.
Wreaking havoc.
Holy shit.
Whoa. That was way worse.
It was a school shooting joke.
We're going to have to have a chat after this.
That'll have to be cut.
So their health takes a hit. These loveless experiences aren't just a hit to their ego. They actually make the flies less able to handle life's other stresses. Hunger and oxidative stress become harder to cope with. This indicates that the stress of rejection not only affects their behavior, but also their physiological resilience. Basically, heartbreak is turning these flies into stressed out little messes. So here's the role of the neuropeptide F, NPF receptor neurons. The study highlights the involvement of a small population of neurons expressing receptors for the fly homolog of neuropeptide Y, neuropeptide F, I think that's a typo. These neurons appear to mediate the fly's increased sensitivity to starvation and heightened social arousal following rejection. So here's the implications, the bigger picture in a tiny world. Social stress in microsize. This research is groundbreaking in demonstrating the existence of social stress in flies. It suggests that, like humans, social interactions and the success or failure of these interactions can have a significant impact on flies. It's like high school drama, but in a petri dish. The love-stress connection. There's a link between the quest for love, stress responses, and the health in these flies, suggesting broader biological principles at play. Who knew flies could teach us about the complexities of love and health? Science simplified through flies. So this is the part that I thought was really cool. Using fruit flies, the study unravels complex interactions between emotions, stress, and health, which might be much trickier to study in higher organisms. But they took this info with flies and really just kind of dumbed it down, made it super simple, and went, well, if this is happening here, it's very likely that it's happening here, but it's much harder to get the stats, get the results mm-hmm. when we're talking about, you know, and when mm-hmm. I say here, I mean like us. So the science behind it all, the nitty gritty. That's another good little
It's a young little bug.
Right.
The researchers used a courtship suppression paradigm.
I thought that was a gnat.
Basically setting up male flies to be rejected by females and observing their behaviors and health. The rejected males show persistent efforts to mate, changes in social behavior, increased aggression, and most importantly, a diminished capacity to handle stress. The role of specific neurons and neuropeptides was explored to understand the physiological underpinnings of the observed behavioral changes. So, in this study, they actually they had photos from the lab. I thought this photo was fucking super interesting. They used obviously macro photography to like get a nice like close up shot. So just to set the mood, let's get some music here. Okay.
I think we might have to blur these photos.
We actually might have to blur it. So here we go. This is directly from the lab. So you can see here we have two. They set up this cute little apartment.
Oh my god, dripping!
And if you haven't watched the show on YouTube, you're not going to want to miss this. There are two fruit flies fucking on a little fruit fly bed. And it's kind of hard to see from where we are, but if you're on a computer screen, you can probably see up close. There's a bottle of lube on the table there. They have looks like some fruit fly lingerie. Handcuffs.
Is this one not enjoying it and he's stressed, or is he being cucked and he likes it?
So that is the fruit fly who didn't get the fuckies, and he's actually crying.
Oh, he's crying.
Tears. Look at that. You can even see there's a camera there. So they're actually videotaping it with a little tiny fly camera.
That's right.
There's bondage stuff on the wall there. And they're fucking to a sex scene from The Fly. David Cronenberg's amazing film, The Fly, with Jeff Goldblum.
Wow, yeah. There's so many little tidbits that I was unable to pick up immediately when this came on. Good for you.
It took me about an hour to make that.
Genuinely,
I know
impressed.
That like before we started recording, you were like, guys, I spent way too long prepping this episode, and now I understand.
Just because of that. So, conclusion: a fly's love life more complex than you might have thought. The study opens up a new avenues in understanding how the failure to obtain a natural reward, such as sexual success, can lead to significant behavioral and psychological changes. It highlights the complex interactions between reward systems, stress responses, and reproductive success, even in as simple an organism as the fruit fly. So next time you see a fruit fly on your fucking bananas, just know that little guy
got feelings.
He wants to fuck too.
And you probably shouldn't kill him. Just let him
try to get that.
Eat the banana.
You know, I know that I made a school shooting joke in poor taste. I understand that, but honestly.
I'm not going to say I loved it until we're done recording.
Right. I think about all of our angry Kentucky fans that like I'm just worried might come up here after this. And
I mean obviously like the school shooting stuff and like people who, you know, they fucking go in and shoot up schools. There's a ton of factors that are going into what's going on with somebody who goes and does that. It's not like you could boil it down to one thing. But there seems to be a thread of like societal rejection and the aftermath of like, or the buildup of symptoms that arise from social rejection
and in America, female rejection in particular, and sexual rejection. If you don't have the proper ways to manage your anger, you know, you turn out to be a Bill O'Reilly or worse. But fucking being a Bill O'Reilly is pretty much the worst thing that there is. But
you're basically just a shell with a bunch of money.
So.
Isn't that interesting though? That study that people just were like, let's see if fruit flies get sad when their dating life sucks. Fucking hilarious.
That would actually be interesting to talk about at a dinner party, totally. Though.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, yeah. You'd have to change that title up.
There are
a whole
swath of people that would that I agree with you. There's so many people that don't.
I think it's all in the delivery. Like if you can tell a good, I mean, if they had
that's the part of PhD researchers that is often lost. Found in talking to researchers is that sometimes they can't communicate it, or often they can't communicate
the image
well.
That you.
Oh, we've had a lot of PhD people on here that have communicated quite well.
Oh no, on here.
Yeah,
but we're usually talking to the people that are out there in the world talking about it.
True,
you know, when you there are thousands of people with PhDs that are like in the lab. They don't like really communicate about
science.
Their work.
Communication is a skill,
totally
for sure. Let us move on to this week's edition of. And a big shout out, producer of the week goes to Aaron, Kira's mother, for sending this one my way. This is a fucking fascinating medical success. A 34-year-old man named David Bauer had a very rough go last year. He required a double lung transplant after he was diagnosed with a potentially fatal infection after years of smoking and vaping. Just blowing ghosts. The surgical team at Northwestern Medicine removed Mr. Bauer's lungs after influenza and a secondary infection severely damaged them, which required the surgical team to create an artificial lung to keep him alive. So all of this is like pretty standard.
An iron lung?
Not quite. But I mean, kind of a similar idea. So what I gathered was that this guy had such an infection that they had to open him up, take his lungs out to put new lungs in. But there was so much infection in him at the time of taking the lungs out that they couldn't just put the new lungs in. They had to allow time for the infection that was in to be like treated, which isn't going to like, it's not like they just give it a good wash and throw the lungs in the same day. It's like, it's going to take some time before they can put the new lungs in. So, back to the article here. This wasn't just any double lung transplant. Using a combination of new technology and quick thinking, they totally fucking MacGyvered this thing, or I would say MacGrubered it. The doctors said Wednesday that the success of Bauer's procedure may help other patients with acute lung infections in need of a lung transplant.
Did they put a tiny piece of celery in his butt?
Even funnier, doctors placed double D breast implants in the man's chest cavity to support his heart while his body cleared the infection.
No way.
Yeah.
Really?
So, quote, this innovative procedure now can allow us to help patients who need lung transplants but are too sick to immediately undergo that procedure. Ankit Bharat, MD, chief of thoracic surgery and director of the Northwestern Medicine Canning Thoracic Institute, said during a press conference, quote, taking the lungs out and supporting the body while the body recovers from the bad infection could help create a path for many patients who are otherwise quite sick.
Can you explain like what that looks like? I can't really picture it in my head. Like,
the double D's?
Like, well,
or
no, I can picture that fine. I'm just wondering like how you said, so that supports or like creates space for the heart to work?
Yeah. So, well, I mean, I'm too fucking dumb. I don't
like,
know.
Are they putting the implants like inside you? They're not just like putting, like giving him breast implants.
Well, I would, no. Yeah.
They can sort of form into generally or roughly the size of like lungs in your body so that they like keep that cavity open.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So I think that's the thing where it's like his lungs were providing a support for his heart that is important, I guess, like structurally because of the cavity. Mm-hmm. And so they can't just like leave the heart in there sort of dangling without anything kind of holding it.
Yeah.
But typically with a lung transplant, it's like they take the lungs out. They obviously have some sort of, you know, whatever. They're like holding the heart in place and while they reattach the new lungs. But this guy's like going to go, I don't know, let's say like he goes 2 weeks without a fucking set of lungs in his heart and he's in a coma. They need to have something in there that's going to like support his heart. But up to this point, it's not really a typical thing. This is literally like, you know, if most people that were typically in this situation would probably just die because
there's so much infection and they don't have a way to support the heart over that
elongated
period of time.
Like if I'm going on an overseas flight and I want to check a bag into the underbelly of the airplane and I have like a very sensitive like glass vase inside that bag.
A vase.
If it's if that's like the heart and I just put only that in the bag,
right,
and
then
check
crushed.
It, it's gonna get all fucked up.
But if you put a bunch of underwear in there.
Or a bunch of double D breast implants.
Or that, yeah.
Then like the chances of it.
Probably higher chances. With
that's
double D's.
I mean, that I feel like that's a perfect analogy of what's happening.
So more context here. Bauer.
I didn't hear it, but I bet it was.
Bauer, who works in landscaping, smoked a pack of cigarettes a day from age 21 until switching to vaping in 2024. He started to experience shortness of breath in April and went to an urgent care center where he was diagnosed with influenza and, quote, a little bit of pneumonia.
Well, they really did him dirty by mentioning vaping at the top of the article. Yeah, and they're like, and he switched to vaping 2 weeks ago.
I think that's like a subtle way
He switched to vaping in 2014.
Oh, you said 2024.
Oh, sorry. Is that what I said? Sorry, I meant 2014.
Yeah, I was like, damn, dude, it's still the first month of the year.
So that pneumonia turned out to be drug resistant. In May, his condition had worsened and he was having trouble walking. So his girlfriend, Susan, took him to an emergency department in St. Louis and he was admitted to the hospital and placed on extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, also known as ECMO. And actually, ECMO is something that Kira has worked with for years in her time at the ICU. Here's a photo of the ECMO machine. So basically, an ECMO is a device that where blood is pumped outside of your body to a heart-lung machine that removes carbon dioxide and sends oxygen-filled blood back into the tissues of the body.
That's crazy. So you basically don't need to breathe because it's putting the oxygen into your blood?
I think you still need to breathe, but yeah, it's like doing a lot of the breath work for you. Probably.
Right. So like, I mean, you still do the function for maybe other reasons.
Yeah, maybe. I can ask Kira.
We're too dumb to know.
Your lungs probably, if your lungs probably still need to move.
Yeah. And in this case, this guy didn't have any lungs. So he had an artificial lung, but I don't think the ECMO is the artificial lung.
Okay.
But is interesting though, because like, that is the function of the lungs.
It's maybe it is.
It's
just to
blood.
Deliver it to the blood. So.
Right. So like if you have that machine, then maybe you don't need your lungs.
I think you do.
Good question. I don't know.
I mean,
they took his lungs out. They put in breast implants. And
wasn't there some guy
in the comments on YouTube? Leave a comment. Do you need lungs?
Wasn't there something? I think it might have been
portable
a CF
ECMO.
Patient that got a double lung transplant, and they actually didn't have lungs in for 6 hours or something like that.
Yeah. Well, this guy probably would have been even longer because of the infection.
Yeah,
which isn't typical.
But I think that was like fairly recently, like within the last couple of years. And it was big news that they could have their lungs out for such a long period of time.
Well, this guy on the ECMO, his condition just continued to worsen. And Raid Tomic, an MD, a pulmonologist and medical director of the Northwestern Medicine Canning Thoracic Institute Lung Transplant Program, said that when doctors from St. Louis called, Bauer's lungs had started to liquefy. If you looked at his x-ray, there was nothing left. The lungs were completely filled with pus. Doctors at Northwestern were confident that they could help Bauer, but were unsure he could survive the transplant without the growing infection being cleared. In addition to the infection, Bauer's heart also stopped at least once, and he had to be revived. Quote, it was clear to us that something had to be done, Barrett said, of the strategy to clear the infection in his lungs and chest cavity. The surgical team created an artificial lung to keep his heart pumping and keep him alive. Quote, once we took the lungs out, we realized that now we've got to support the heart, Barrett said. That's where some of the innovative thinking came about. We were looking for the biggest thing that will fit in there in his chest cavity, and he has a big chest cavity, and hence the double D implants. Within 24 hours of listing him for a transplant, surgeons received an offer and were able to implant the lungs in Bauer, who had fully recovered from the procedure. Quote, despite his heart stopping, we were able to get him back. And then soon after we listed him, we found a perfect match. So, you know, a lot of stars aligned, and clearly he was very lucky. So here is a photo of, what was his name? Mr. Bauer. This is him just a few days after the after the lung transplant.
That's
looks
not,
great.
That's not that's, actually him.
Oh, I was like, are you for real?
It's, that's
a few
really
days
funny.
After the trip. I think we just got demonetized.
Guys, can you
imagine? Hold on. Here's an actual photo. This is him with Dr. Barat. And wow. he's looking fucking
wow.
great. He's looking
Dude,
great.
He looks remarkably young.
Yeah.
For having smoked a pack of cigarettes
yeah.
a day for how
he's,
long?
I mean, he's 34.
For how?
Over a decade. Started smoking when he was...
pack a day, dude.
21 yeah. years old to 34.
Pack a day.
Yeah. And vaping. And blowing ghosts.
I don't think that like, I mean, it's a lot, obviously, but I think for people who smoke a lot, I don't think that is...
A pack
like,
a day?
I feel like my mom...
I feel like a pack a day is like a... Yeah, smoking. It's kind of like a... Yeah, I smoke.
Really?
I don't know.
I mean,
I don't
especially
know.
If you think about people on job how many, sites and like,
I mean, I do a pack
day,
of Zins
like,
a day. So,
how many smokes are in a cigarette? Or in a how many cigarettes are in a pack?
No
20?
Alexa, computer, how many cigarettes are in a pack of cigarettes?
According to an Alexa Answers contributor, there are 20 cigarettes in a pack. So if you smoke a pack a day, you're smoking a lot of cigarettes. Did that answer
20,
your question?
20 cigarettes. There you go.
20.
So like, if you imagine, you know, somebody doing like an 8-hour shift at like the trade center where we worked and people were taking smoke breaks. Like, dude, they would go like every
that means you're
45
taking,
minutes to an hour.
No, but then you'd have to be, you'd have to be doing less than 8.
Well, that's like 8 to 10 on a shift. And
you'd have
then,
to be doing, you'd have to be doing like 3 an hour. Every 20 minutes taking a smoke. Like, dude, that's crazy.
I mean, if I was a smoker, that's probably what I'd be doing. anyway.
Fuck, that's nuts.
That's lot, yeah. that's this week's edition of Feel Good Friday.
Don't smoke.
So yeah, don't smoke
or just do it infrequently if you
and,
do.
And if you're gonna be angry,
tone it down.
Be less Bill O'Reilly. Be more Japanese about it. Yeah. Let's give a big thank you to all of you who listen to the show and all of you who, you know, love rolling with the punches and love the fact that we can have jokes about these things that that sometimes aren't typically joked about. That's what makes this show great. So, if you really want to, and if you don't agree with that, come on over to YouTube, leave a nasty comment. Let's get those comments popping yeah. off. If you're angry about today's episode, let us know in the comments on YouTube.
And then maybe just take a breath and think about maybe what that says about you.
Yeah. And big shout out to all of our Discord members. If you want to come join the community over on Discord, it is, it's popping off even more than the comment section here on YouTube. So you can do that. Link is in the show notes of every episode. Even bigger shout out to everybody who has ever left a rating or review of the podcast. And you can still do that wherever you find rating and reviews on things like Apple Podcasts and Spotify and all that shit.
And we're recording with guests. We record all the time. We put out new episodes with people that we record with. And if you want to be one of those people that records with us, you can go over to our website, sickboypodcast.com, click on the form, fill it up,
and
be on the show.
Thank you, as always, to the folks who helped make the show happen. Annika, our production assistant, we are really grateful for your support and help. Richard Coyne for the theme music, Jeff Lonis, our manager, Donovan the CPAP Morgan for his help on our Monday episodes. We love all of you guys.
That is it for this week.
I'm Brian.
I'm Taylor.
And I'm Jeremy, and this is Sick Boy.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.